celebrating 20 years of 24, and we are honored and thrilled to have as our guest today, David Fury. He is such a huge part of 5 through 8 and beyond, seasons of 24 and so many other things that I like to geek out about. So welcome, David, to the podcast today.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, David, how did you get involved in 24 as a writer in season 5?
Well, I met Howard Gordon while he was working on the show Angel, a spinoff from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
I was on Buffy at the time, and he had moved on. And I was a contributing writer to Angel, even though I was technically on Buffy's staff. I was freelancing on Angel, and through that, Howard and I became friends. And we kept touch even after he left the show to go do 24, I think. And occasionally we'd have breakfast, and he'd always keep talking to me about the show and wondering what I was up to. And, you know, I was with Angel a little bit, several years past his experience, and then went on to do a couple of things, including Lost. And then one breakfast, Howard just said, would you like to come to 24? And I said, I'd love to come to 24. It's a pleasure working with Howard. And it's funny because I was on Buffy. 24 premiered while I was doing Buffy.
Right.
And Drew Goddard and I, who worked together on Buffy, would take a break from our writing if we were working late into the night to stop what we were doing and go watch 24. Like, let's
really?
Go watch, yeah, we go watch 24. Take a break and then go back to our writing after 24 was over.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was our, you know, so it felt very fitting to wind up there.
Eventually. And Buffy was in its last seasons at that point by the time 24 was kind of getting
yes.
up and running.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it was. It was in its last season, and there was another season of Angel, and by that time, 24 was in its third or fourth season.
Sure. Now, I envy Justin because Justin had the ability in later years to binge the whole thing. But I was watching, I remember 2001, watching Buffy and watching 24 at the same time. Not the same time, but, you know, in the same time frame.
Sure.
And, I remember having to wait several weeks, sometimes between episodes for both. Especially yeah, the last years of Buffy.
Well, back then, the way to binge it was, you wait till the season's over, buy the DVDs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I hear from so many people who did not watch the series, but who bought the DVDs when they heard about it and binge right through them. And that is the best way to watch 24.
So sure.
You're absolutely right.
That's, yep. What was your favorite experiences and highlights working on 24 from 5 to 8? And you were involved with Live Another Day as a writer in Legacy. So what was
exactly
your
answer? Yeah.
Do you have any favorite moments or highlights that you can share?
Well, I mean, the first really favorite moment was, when I left Lost to go do 24, it was a tough decision. It was a tough thing, and because we had just won the, we'd had a great first year,
right? Yeah,
kind of when we won the Emmy, going to 24 was definitely a switch for me. I came out of comedy, believe it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
I was doing sitcoms originally, so through Buffy, I was able to do a lot of comedy. I was hired as a comedy writer for Buffy.
Yeah.
And then when it got to Angel, which is darker, and then Lost, the comedy kept getting smaller and smaller. When I got to 24, it was no comedy. Like
right,
every
right.
time I tried to inject a little comedy in it, a little funny, a little banter, no, we don't do that here.
Right.
So so while I'm trying to find my footing, the glory of it was that by the end of the season, we were nominated for, again, 24 had been nominated before, but this time it seemed like I was going to win back-to-back Emmys, which, in fact, is what happened.
Amazing. I mean, we're a little late, but congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you. I wish somebody had said something to me at the time.
It got lost in the mail. I know it got lost in the mail. We apologize, but congratulations. That's
so that was a big thrill with the guys I was working with who had never – they hadn't experienced it before. I had just experienced the year earlier, so I was a veteran. I went, oh, yeah, it's no big deal anymore. But, you know, after a 5-year stretch for a show that's been on for 5 years to be acknowledged for the first time with an Emmy, that's extraordinarily rare. There's a lot of shows that start strong and fade away, or shows that are always consistently good, but they don't often win their first Emmy 5 years down the road. But
you're right. That really is the contrast, because that first year of Lost, all people talked about was Lost for a solid, you know, after about 4 or 5 episodes, it became the show, you know, certainly for that year and continued on. But 24 was, when I was watching, it was like, I have an extra DVD set that I use as my 24 lending library because I needed more people around me to know 24. So I would say, look, first one's free. Take season one. If you don't come back for season two, I don't even know who you are. I don't even want to talk to you. And by then, like,
you're a drug dealer, basically.
Pretty much, yes.
The free one. After that, you come to me.
Exactly. I'm your source. But I purposely had an extra set of the series because I got people hooked on the show because I needed more people to talk, you know, at length about it. But that was one of those shows that, like you said, it was so addictive that nobody ever didn't take me up on the offer. Like, everybody came back wanting more.
Yeah. It was hard enough. Yeah, go ahead, Justin.
No, and to add to Ryan's point, I mean, speaking of addictive, I mean, even today, in today's 20 years later, the show is still addictive. Our fan base is growing and it's still popular and people are still talking and loving it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So,
it's one of the few benefits of being Canadian is that it's on Disney Plus now. And so I'm at 3 a.m. watching episodes like I've never seen them before. Even though I could go upstairs and watch them upstairs, I own them. And I'm still streaming them.
Yeah, and that's a testament to the writing of you and Howard and Bob and Joel and Manny and Evan and all that.
Well, I think very much it's a testament to the construct of the show, the production value, but also the fact that the show is like a runaway train. You know, it was everything is every moment's a cliffhanger. Everything is just this crazy momentum that you just don't get on other shows. I mean, most shows wrap up their stories in every episode, and even the ones that continue, you know, do so at a sort of leisurely, more character-based place. This was just a wall-to-wall bang, just momentum. It was just momentum. Right. And that was something that TV wasn't doing much of at the time. At all. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Now, what was the challenge of you jumping, you know, off of Lost into, and Lost had its elements of humor, certainly Sawyer, you know, and that, you know, there are certainly sides of it that certainly gave a laugh, certainly Buffy.
Hurley, I got to have some fun with.
What were the challenges of coming to 24?
It was challenging because, again, I come from part of my strength as a writer is in dialogue and being able to turn a fun phrase or you know, do a little callback from here, you know, saying something that somebody said earlier for humorous intent. And those were things they just did not want to do. So I had to kind of reinvent the way I wrote.
Right.
I had to, and I started to call it meat and potatoes writing because there's really no flourishes to it. There's no poetry to the writing of 24.
Right.
It is just down and dirty and get to it. And be powerful and be, you know, and be earnest, you know, and don't be flippant and don't be glib, you know, everything is high stakes.
Yeah.
So I had to stretch a muscle I hadn't stretched before.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that the humor that I find in 24 is usually in Chloe's face.
Yeah.
she can communicate so much without saying a word.
Yeah.
I was a fan of hers from Mr. Show. Like back in the day. Yeah.
Sure. And I loved her on Larry Sanders.
Oh, Larry Sanders. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, yeah. Yeah.
But,
absolutely.
But also I was able to, do some stuff with Edgar. If you remember Edgar.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. We had Lewis on last night.
Oh, really? Yes. Okay. Yeah. I love Lewis.
It was fun.
Yeah. So those kinds of things you would sneak things in, but generally speaking, I had to sort of become a different writer. And, it took me all of season 5, to get to the place where suddenly it clicked in, and it became second, and it became totally second nature to me to be able to, you know, if I was doing a story and had to write a script, I could bang it out.
Yeah.
But it took me, you know, there was a learning curve for that first season.
And you stayed on for the rest of the ride too.
I did.
Went through that transition and stayed and helped steer the ship for further seasons.
To be honest with you, when I went to the show, I said to my agent, I said, so this is only going to go like another year, right? I said, they possibly can't keep this one day thing going.
Right.
Because I watched it as a writer kind of loving the experiment of trying to tell an entire day in 24 episodes.
Yeah.
You know, real time. And that experiment fascinated everybody. I mean, certainly the writer, other writers, it fascinated. But I thought it was I didn't think it was a gimmick that was going to sustain itself. And I was wrong because, you know, they more and more and more, we could have kept going after season 8, but the show was becoming prohibitively expensive. So, you know, and the studio and I think they regretted their decision. I think they would have still wanted to bring it back. I mean, I think they decided that later, but at the time they just thought it's too expensive.
Now, speaking of that, so you were involved with 24 Live Another Day in 2014 as a writer and some episodes of 24 Legacy. We talked to Howard, and Howard said they've been talking about a potential revival of 24 with Kiefer, and he's apparently working with Todd Harthen, who runs The Resident. So we'd like to know, you know, you were involved as a writer on 24 heavily. So what are your thoughts on the future of the 24 franchise, considering Kiefer is open to returning and Jack Bauer's character was left open and unresolved at the end of Live Another Day?
Well, I think it would be great. I have to say that there's always talk about 24 returning. There always is. They're never stopped. I mean, after season 8, there was still talk of it. After we did the movie, you know, Live Another Day, there was talk about bringing the series back. And a lot of it had to do with, and Kiefer wanted to do it. But again, the problem is in the business model of television, the way it used to be, that's not anymore. But
right.
The budgets would keep exponentially increasing with each year. And now, you know, they've got the general business model with all the streaming services is they've condensed series into 10 episodes, you know, into 11 episodes. And they don't have any promise for more. They kind of treat it all as like sort of the British model of
like a limited series.
Limited series.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and then again, there's always it's the same thing with Buffy, actually. There's always talk every year about how do we bring back Buffy? How do we reboot it? Do we do this? You know, is it a new Buffy? Is it the old Buffy? The thing is, the rights are tied up with a lot of things that don't exist anymore, like 20th Century Fox Television. I know Disney has taken it over, but suddenly you're going to see all these other people in the mix who feel they own the rights these characters, the rights to the, you know, so if they can manage to do it, I think at the very least, a movie, a limited series, I would call a limited series basically a long movie that wraps up, that kind of finalizes the whole thing. I don't see it continuing indefinitely. But that's my own opinion. I mean, they tried to do a movie. There were scripts written. I'm sure they've talked about this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The death of Jack Bauer. And we also talked when we did Live Another Day, we talked about it as being the final denouement for Jack Bauer.
Yeah.
No one could ever pull the trigger. No one could ever. No. Like, yeah, let's end it. Let's just give it a prop because no one was satisfied. No matter what ending we give it, no one was satisfied. So, you know, it's always like, let's give Jack a reasonably happy ending because he's been tortured for all these years.
Yeah.
And we're like, that's not Jack Bauer. He can never have a happy ending. He always has to end ugly and horrible. And so he has to die. But but nobody wants to kill him.
Nobody wants to kill him. Yeah.
Nobody wants to kill him.
And we don't want to see him killed.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. I mean, I understand that. I mean, you don't want to see your hero. You don't want to see James Bond die. You don't want to see, you know. Yeah, we don't want to see that. But by the same token, that's the proper end for Jack Bauer. So if there's no proper end, then it's always going to be strung along as, hey, maybe we'll do some more. Hey, maybe, hey, if Kiefer's up for it, if Kiefer still has his teeth and doesn't mind getting out of his walk, you know, his wheelchair.
Kiefer said he wants to do it before he has to use a cane.
Yes.
That was what he said to us.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that, you know, who knows when that, I mean, he takes a lot of damage. That
that's certainly, I mean, certainly in the group, it always comes up. Like, 24 Universe is a really unique thing because we'll say, here's what David's doing, and somebody will post a link to the show you're working on. Or I'll say, here's Roger Cross is doing this, or whatever. And it's one of those very supportive pages. But every couple days it comes up, more so in the other groups, but the idea of, okay, When's Jack coming back? And I'm a couple years younger than Kiefer, and I can't do, I just moved my daughter last week, and I was really good at moving 20 years ago, but not anymore. So I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, sure. I'm a few years older than you guys, so I mean, I believe me.
It's a physical job.
Yeah, and another limited series like Living Another Day would be a cool idea to wrap up 24, like perhaps a rescue operation from Tony and Almeida and Kate Morgan and Chloe to get Jack out of Russia.
Why isn't Tony Almeida in prison somewhere? How does he keep bouncing back? That is crazy.
Because he's persuasive. According to him.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I fantasize about it too. I go, maybe I should just write. I mean, I don't know what those guys are doing. Maybe I'll write a little spec thing where Jack, you know. And obviously the thing they're going to try to do, the thing we've tried to do in the past is partner him with someone. So right. To let that person take the mantle.
Right.
But it never sticks. It just never sticks.
Yeah.
We had Yvonne Strahovski.
Yes.
In the Live Another Day, who we thought, hey, why not continue the 24, you know, format?
Yeah.
And her character, but it's never quite gets, you know, partly because everyone's insecure about letting Jack Bauer not front it. They tried it with Legacy, which obviously was not going to fly because people missed 24 without Jack.
Yeah, whoever was going to take that role was going to get a hard time. Yeah.
Well, and they tried develop, and Howard tried developing a prequel or a legal thriller in the 24 right. format. And they also tried developing a prequel. Jack Bauer. But
who's going to play him?
Ultimately, Fox didn't go for those ideas for some reason. Yeah.
And that was a question I had for you with Yvonne Strahovski. I always thought she was, if there was going to be a natural mantle passed, when she choked out the guy hanging, you know, suspended from the, you know, in the middle of the room, I went, that was a Jack move. That whole season was filled with Jack moves and Jack instincts that nobody else had. And I thought that would be a natural fit.
Yeah, that's what we really leaned into with her character trying to get there.
But it worked. I mean, it worked as far as convincing us. I mean, I would be on board. So.
And I think because if that character has a legitimate connection to Jack, you know, I thought that will help smooth grease the wheels to a new 24 generation.
Yeah.
By having, you know, the problem we had with I wasn't on the show. I just wrote a couple of scripts for him.
Right. Right.
Obviously, was, you know, he was not a part of Jack's world. He was his own, and that should have been a show, but it shouldn't have been a 24 show.
You know? Right. I always, and again, for what it's worth, I always thought the way Star Wars has done the Star Wars story, so it's not part of the nine. Right. It almost a 24 story legacy, I think.
Yes.
There would have been less flack from whoever had an opinion about it. I thought it was well done. But again,
was Live Another Day left open because you guys wanted to pursue another Kiefer season down the road, or was that?
No, actually, even during production of Live Another Day, before we had written the ends, we were still debating how to end it. That's one of the debates was, you know, do we want to end it with Jack in Los Angeles going to see his daughter?
Right.
His estranged daughter, and ended on kind of this moment of a guy who's sort of, he's disenfranchised from his country or had been, and from his daughter and trying to find some way back. I mean, it would have been very poignant, but it may not have been 24, you know? So we talked about that. We talked about killing Jack. We talked about, before we killed, what's her name?
I forgot. Audrey Raines? Yes.
Kim Raines' character. Oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, are we killing her? Are we going to kill her? Jack or whatever.
Right.
So,
sorry. You know, go ahead.
I just heard two buzzes. I thought. Oh, yeah. So we did not know when we started. And that's true of all. If they didn't tell you, I'm telling you now. Of all 24 seasons, we had no idea where it was going to go. Sure. Nobody mapped out a season. Nobody ever said, and we're going to start here, we're going to end here. Yeah. We had general ideas, but they always flew out the window because, you know, the needs changed as the stories got eaten up so quickly.
Right.
So, so in the same thing with the movie, even though it was instead of 24 episodes, it was only 12.
Yeah.
We still had the same problem of how are we going to end this? And,
you know, even as we're talking,
it was open-ended just because, again, everyone was afraid to make anything definitive.
Yeah. I mean, even as we're talking, it's dawning on me. The idea is that if Jack had reunited with Kim and become grandpa again and life was back to normal, I don't know if we'd still be talking about it. You know, from the end of, if Live Another Day ended that way, I don't know that we would still be
just a caveat to that. We did want to do something like, it seems seemingly Jack is, you know, got his daughter, got this.
Yeah.
And then you cut to outside and there's a car and there's somebody in the car and somebody like cocks, you know, an automatic. You know. And then you end it on this, and you're going, whoa, shit, he's not out. You know? We thought he was out, but it's something that was happening. And, you know, you keep but at least you give him sort of an emotional, cathartic ending.
Yeah.
But you recognize he's not going to be able to rest because something new is happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was the way we were splitting hairs. You know?
I mean, I think we'd still be talking about it, but maybe not with the same sense of what happened to him. Where is he? Why, you know?
Is he in Moscow? Where is he? You know,
yeah, yeah.
Is he being tortured or, you know, that kind of stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You realize whatever they give you or we give you, if I wind up being a part of it, it's going to be just the same cliffhanger. What's going to happen? Where's Jack? Why is love? You're going to be just as frustrated by the end, by the next one because it's going to be open-ended, just like this one. And you're going to say, but we don't know what happened. Yes. And you never will, because if you tell you what happened, like you say, we won't be having this conversation.
Yeah, unless someone pulls the trigger on Jack Bauer.
Well, Justin, it'd have to be you, because nobody else is going to do it. I don't think anybody else is going to do it. So I want to jump off just for a second to Buffy. Because Buffy, again, they were concurrent in my universe. They were running, you know, at the same time. Right. Certainly with the, you know, coming close to the end and kind of ramping up of 24. Right. But I watched, you wrote one of my, no, it is my favorite episode of Buffy.
Thank you.
Grave.
Oh, Grave, yes.
That Grave was is loaded.
Yeah.
I watched it again this afternoon.
That was the only finale of Buffy not written by Joss.
Wow.
Not credited to Joss.
Okay.
But I will say Joss had a very heavy hand in that. So there's a lot of Joss in that. I will take some credit for that episode. Or even half the episode. But there's a lot of Joss in it as well.
I mean, it comes in with, again, I watched it again for the first time in a couple of years. The comedy writer certainly showed up with that, well, buckle up, Rupert, because I've turned pro. Only her voice goes that deep, I've turned pro, which is amazing. But by the end, I know I've seen this episode probably a dozen times. I was tearing up at the end of this episode today because where it went and how emotional, again, this silly show about vampires and chasing, you know, all that kind of stuff. But where the depths to which that show took was because of the writing. I mean, you couldn't have had that ending of that episode without having ramped it up and gotten to a point where we're like, is she going to kill him? I think she's going to kill him. And again, spoilers for anybody that you need to go back and watch Buffy, all of you, regardless. But that was such an emotionally powerful episode that was earned, right? The whole Xander moment and the, you know, is she going to do it? And that was loaded. So there were lots of funny in the middle of the veiny, scary Willow. But like I said, the heart of that show really, really came out. That's why it's my favorite episode of Buffy.
That's the beauty of that show. And everything about it was rooted toward that heart.
Hmm.
No matter how silly we got with it.
Yeah, yeah. And my other question to you on that vein, did you see the episodes of How I Met Your Mother where Dark Willow showed up?
No.
there were at least, in the run of that show, there were at least three different episodes where she became Dark Willow.
Oh, so you're just saying Allison's character.
Allison's character, right. Because
I was imagining you actually had Allison. I was going, what?
What? Huh? No, the character Allison played in How I Met Your Mother had at least three moments through the run, because it was so meta, and there were so many, you know where I'm from, right? Like these kind of, in joke references. But there was one in particular where she just kind of did this, and she had the look, and it all came back, and and she kind of picked up stuff with her mind, and it was like, whoa, the Buffy fans loved that moment.
I missed it.
Yeah. I was going to say, as a comedy writer, you probably...
I missed those episodes.
Yeah, as a comedy writer, you'd probably really have appreciated seeing your work again to some degree.
So. I like all the meta stuff.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Absolutely. Is there anything you're watching now that we should be checking out?
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of older stuff. I've been watching The Wire again.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a good revisit.
Yeah, and that was all around the same time as 24. It was around the same time as it was early 2000s. So I was watching that. I'm watching, let's see, what was the last thing I watched? Modern. I enjoy The Good Fight.
Plus. That was powerful.
And I'm told I should watch Invincible, which I haven't done yet.
Yeah, that's we talked to Chris Dimitopoulos last night, and he was a big part of that. But yeah, that was I'm about four episodes in, and I'm really liking it. Yeah,
enjoy.
I am very much so.
I haven't checked it out yet, but that's my next one.
Yeah, very good. What other besides writing and all the other things you do? What are there other passions that you? That you pursue?
Well, your passions change as you get older. I mean, my passion's always been acting. It started out my whole writing career came out of acting, and my biggest passion was doing theater. Obviously, this has been a bad year for theater, I've been trying to throw a little bit of my whatever I've got, money or name or anything, to help with most of my friends who are still actively working in the New York stage. I think I'm my biggest passion now is travel. I have the time now to really go and spend. Howard Gordon, in fact, went to Italy for several months, if not a full year.
Right.
While we were doing Live Another Day, or just after we did Live Another Day. And that just sounded glorious to me.
Absolutely,
for a year. So, I think that's my next. I had booked something in Greece. I had booked something on an island in Greece that I had to cancel because of the pandemic. Right. But I'm going to get back to it because it's time for me to get back to. I love history. I love European history. I love just world history.
So. You visit the ruins and that kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah,
I haven't actually been to Greece yet, but
okay.
But the ruins. I've been to Turkey. I've been to, Italy. I've been to France.
What's your favorite place to have visited that you've visited already?
Gotta say Italy. Italy is the most remarkably beautiful country.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just and you can't beat Italian food. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're right.
Absolutely.
You're right.
You might like my dad is from Bermuda.
Oh, yeah?
And the history of Bermuda is that there's forts on each. It's only 21 miles long, but there's forts on each end of the island because during the War of 1812, that was the stopover point. That was the refuel. That was all that kind of stuff. So I'll spend most of my trip going through the ruins that I've been through before and the forts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's fascinating because I was thinking Bermuda is just simply a beach resort. I'm going to Bermuda.
Yeah.
Lay on the beach. I had no idea there was so many historical things to see there.
That was the place for the British to kind of, it was not a halfway point, but it was a point just before you got to the mainland to, kind of relax and, kind of get ready for the big fight, I guess. So,
nice.
Yeah, lots of forts and watchtowers and all that kind of stuff there. So,
is there anything else unique you could tell us about yourself these days? And
Unique. No, I don't think there's anything unique about me. Did I say anything unique? When
you said many things unique.
I guess it's unique that I'm still married to my first wife.
That's amazing. Yes.
That is amazing.
After almost 30 years. And, you know, we have three kids who are all grown now and starting their lives. And, you know, a lot of my peers, they're on their second marriages. They're on their
second, third
families. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of my peers, too.
Yeah. I'll tell you, you know, it's probably true all over, but I'll tell you, this business is brutal. Yeah. It's brutal for that kind of thing. It's just the hours you work and all that. So I feel uniquely privileged.
You should be congratulated for that. Congratulations. That's awesome.
For students coming out of school who want to get into writing in the TV business or film or acting or into network television, what would your advice be to students wanting to get into the industry in those three areas?
Sure. Well, that's one of those things where I used to give that advice all the time, which was to get into theaters, get into local theaters. And as writers, as actors, as directors, whatever, people would come and they would see your work and they you know, and that would evolve into people who work in television who'd see your work and they go, yeah, I love that play. I want to talk to that playwright. Now, I will say things have changed. Things have changed since I started out. You know, now everybody puts their work online, but everyone has a YouTube channel, you know, putting out their work. I think the best advice I can give, which ties in with the theater, is produce your own work. Get your work out there.
Yeah.
Get your work as best as you can. Get it out there on YouTube, on Vimeo, whatever it takes. And, you know, if you have a unique voice, if you have a unique sensibility, it's going to come across. And use those as your calling cards. You know, because people unfortunately aren't going to come see you do your sketch comedy or come see you do your, you know, one act approach, you know, but they will watch, you know, a fairly well produced, it doesn't have to be huge production value, but a simple, strong little video will do more for your acting, writing, directing careers than anything else. And these days, I tell people to get their master's degrees, young students, as it seems to be making more of an impact now. Experience is always the best teacher, but short of that, you know.
Get the education.
Go to higher schooling.
Okay. 24 is a bit of, it is. It's a pedigree for us, so that when I see somebody's name attached to something, I go, oh, I recognize them from 24. I'll take the time to watch this show or check out this film or whatever the case may be. So much so, we're the kind that read credits and listen to commentary and all that kind of stuff. So when I saw your name attached to 24, you know, coming into the fifth season, I went, oh, Buffy. And I knew kind of where you were coming from. What is it that excites you about writing? Because it seems to me that writing is like 90% of, you can put the best cast together, but if the script isn't good, it's unwatchable. But what is it about writing that excites you at this point for you?
I think because I'm putting on the production in my mind. When you're writing, you're actually imagining. And as long as you can live with the idea, it'll never be as good as it was in your mind.
Right.
Like, you're going to watch actors not knowing how to turn that joke the way you want, or not quite landing that moment the way you saw in your head. But what's exciting is when you write it, and since I was an actor and a director, I'm able to get excited about the movie that's going on inside. And so when I had opportunities to direct on Buffy or Angel, I was able to get a little bit more of a sense of that, a little bit more of that sense of excitement of, wow, this is really all me. And the mistakes are mine.
Right.
The good stuff, but the good stuff is mine. So I can take credit for that.
Yeah.
But I think finding new points of view is really important nowadays. Especially since there's so much identity writing now, where, you know, people are from different backgrounds are writing about their experiences, much more personal. So there's a lot of great personal stuff coming out.
Yeah.
And that's where you can draw. You can draw when you look at your own lives, no matter where we come from. There are stories that are particular to us that move us and make us laugh, and that'll always be valuable.
So
just keep doing it and just keep and keep hanging around the other talented people. So
well, thank you. Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much for your time today. I want to leave you with one more thing, with one more question.
Yeah.
You talked about, and the only reason I bring it up is because you brought it up a minute ago. What was one line that was delivered by an actor that they got it right, where you wrote a line, and when they delivered it, it landed?
Wow.
That's a big question. You've written a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm going to say, what line, because I want to pick a line that's pretty good.
Not just 24, wherever.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I guess a lot of it is just people who know how to throw away a line, just like not put too much emphasis in it and just make it. And there was a line in Buffy where somebody thanks Seth Green, you know, played Oz. His name was Oz.
Thank you. Yes.
Thanks, Oz, for lending me your stereo system. And Seth said, "Mi Casio es su Casio."
said it perfectly, exactly what you wanted it. Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you again for your time. Thanks for hanging out with us and talking 20 years of 24 and everything else.
Typical barrister.